Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
Three, two, one. Welcome back, Criminal Mischief Nation, to another bonus episode. And happy Martin Luther King Day. This is one of my favorite holidays. Martin Luther King was a hero of mine in high school. I did a ton of research on him. I studied all of his speeches. The letters from when he was in prison. I loved the cadence of his speech. I just found him very, very inspirational as a younger man. And so this holiday always reminds me of that time in my life. So happy.
What was the jumping off point? What captured your attention and your imagination? I mean, aside from the obvious, but like as a teenager.
A sophomore in high school in history class.
I swear to God, if there's a girl involved in this, I'm
not a girl involved. There's not a girl involved. As a sophomore in high school, we had to pick a topic for like a big midterm like paper. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had forgotten about it. I didn't do the work. Okay. And I knew very, very little about Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, so he's going around the class. All right, Susie, what's your topic? I'm going to do Alexander the Great, conquering, Darius. Okay, great. What are you going to do? I'm going to do George Washington. And I went, oh, fuck. Okay. All right, I want to do Martin Luther King Jr. I knew nothing about him. And then the kid in front of me picked Martin Luther King. So I'm thinking I'm screwed, but I used it to my advantage. I went, oh, that's what I was going to do. I had all this research, right? Like completely lying, right?
Oh my gosh. And totally looking like you're the victim.
Totally playing the victim. And what the teacher said was, he goes, oh, well, Brandon, if you've done so much work on this, here's what we can do. Instead of you doing a paper on Martin Luther King, why don't you just focus on do a paper on the March on Washington and the I Have a Dream speech, just on that. I went, well, okay, still the victim. And so what I was able to do was a deep dive into everything about that day and specifically about that speech. And
what's cool is that you knew that you had that competition because you had to go up against that other guy and you were like, he's not going to beat me.
Yeah. And it wound up being great because I was able to, my entry point into a great man was probably his greatest public appearance. Okay. And so that really lit me up. And then I was able to move backwards and figure out what brought him there. And so it was great. It was really a several years long kind of relationship with researching him and everything about it. So so it's one of my favorite holidays today. Maybe my favorite non-gift giving, fake entity holidays,
Just say that you love the holiday? Is it too much to ask?
Just want to get specific. I like getting gifts.
No, nobody's going to accuse you of being sentimental.
I like Easter candy. I like Halloween candy, right?
I know.
I like Valentine's Day, but all that stuff's made up. This is like a real thing. This is, a guy. So that's what I like about it.
He's a good one. So yes, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And thank you for sharing that story because, I love when you fall in love with a character and he's not a character, he's larger than life, but you did the work and it obviously had a huge impact at a really important time in your life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel the same way about Eleanor Roosevelt, I got really into her. ER.
Well, the great thing about King, other than what, all of his wonderful work on behalf of the minority community and on behalf of America as a whole, the moral arc of the universe, bend towards justice, like all of that, is that the specific things, like the pillars of his character and of his movement, one of them being peaceful, nonviolent protest. Okay. And I was like, oh shit, that takes a lot of balls. Right. And so then that leads you to like the Mahatma Gandhis of the world, right? And other people who came before him that he learned from and was influenced by, you know, like Jackie Robinson, right? How the owner of the Dodgers, you know, I don't know if it's apocryphal or how accurate the interaction is with Branch Rickey when Rickey was telling him, you can't react. These people are going to try to get you to, you know, to be the monster and the boogeyman that they're painting you as, and you can't do it. And he goes, what, you want me to not fight back? He goes, no, I want you to be so strong that you don't have to fight back. Like, that's who I need you to be, right? And then, you know, and do it on the field and show them. And so, you know, you can draw all of these comparisons between these great people throughout history that embodied a lot of the same, you know, characteristics when it came to their social stances, you know?
Well, and that's the harder thing to do. The harder thing is to not react and not beat someone up and not want vengeance and not, especially when there's no justice, you know? So, yeah. I mean, it's a high bar and a high road, and he definitely walked it and, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So happy Martin Luther King Day. All right. So let's get to this freaking story.
Do you see why it needed two parts now?
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. So we jump in with the interview of the kid.
Yeah.
Which is got to be such a difficult proposition for a mental health expert and a kid kind of DIFUS or whatever, what do they call it up there? It's not DIFUS, is it? It's Child Services, CPS or whatever, Child Protective Services.
Yeah. Department of Social and Health Services is the entity that.
Right. Down here, it's Department of Youth and Family Services. They call it DIFUS. But,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But so, because you never know what this kid's going to say, right? And the kid, you know, I love the s'more recipe. S'more recipe was on point with this kid, right? Mm-hmm. Remembered the second graham cracker. Like the kid's going, okay, absolutely. Graham cracker, marshmallow, chocolate, and then graham cracker.
Right. You can't forget the lid. No, you can't forget it.
Or then it's not a sandwich. And then shit will get everywhere. Right. Exactly. So the kid knew that. And what do you think? You know so much more about this than I do, because I knew nothing about this case. What is the general consensus of what did people think the kid meant when mommy's with the crystal, where the crystals are?
In the mines, you know? I mean, you know, they have lots of, I don't know what that means. And I don't know if, I think that, you know, people just thought she was in the mines.
Right.
Is there because a place were there shiny crystals? I don't know, but it could have been rocks, you know, like, you know, how diamonds, rocks, like,
shiny,
like gold,
right.
Gold.
Or like shiny, like valuable things, where shiny, valuable things are maybe.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that, you know, to a child, like, I mean, I don't know if you ever messed around with fool's gold, like, you know, when you were a kid and just like, oh my gosh, you know, playing in the mud and the river and all that. Like, I mean,
but
whatever.
So does that mean that the kid was there in the mines with the dad?
I mean, I think that he was somewhere.
Right.
I mean, I believe that he took her out there and, you know, put her somewhere out there.
Was she already dead before they left the house? Probably because of the wet couch and the fans, like the death blow was probably struck.
Well, here's the thing. They think that he possibly, you know, that pancake breakfast, you know, it was a big deal because Giovanna, the neighbor, came over and she was helping untwine the yarn.
Yeah.
And she walked in, and it was after Susan had taken the children to church, and they came back and she saw Josh cooking, which was like crazy because he never did it. And he's, you know, seems like this guy that's just like, I mean, he took his family out to meals for like $4.77 at some taco joint there. And he was really proud of that. Like, you know, he was just thought that was so cool, you know, and he talked about that during the interview, but he didn't cook. He refused to cook. And so I think that I think some people believe that he spiked her pancake because it was separate from the other food. And then she got, she kind of had didn't feel well and was really tired. And so I think that there's no evidence to prove that happened, but it could be a potential. So she was kind of incapacitated a little bit, you know? Somehow he got her in the back of that minivan, in the trunk, I think. And then drove her out there.
The kid drew a picture of a stick figure in the fucking trunk. That's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So
what do you think? Because you haven't heard anything. What do you think?
Gosh, I the kids being there, it makes everything like up in the air, you know, like, do you hide it from the kids? Like, is mommy sleeping the whole time? Why are you putting mommy in the trunk? Like, this guy wasn't stupid. He knew that the kids weren't fucking deaf mutes. You know what I mean? Like,
Think about it. He puts them in the car at like 2 a.m. and they're like asleep. And you know, when you put your little children in their car seats, 4-year-old and 2-year-old, they're going to be asleep in 5 seconds. Once you have that heat on.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, you put them in there and they're probably falling asleep. You know what I mean? Yeah. So then if he puts mommy in the trunk and then they drive, you know, they're going to be asleep that entire time. That entire drive.
And how would he have the imagery of a stick figure in the trunk?
Well, maybe they woke up or they hadn't gotten to their destination.
Maybe he woke up when daddy was taking mommy out of the trunk.
I mean, something happened.
And daddy didn't know that the kid was looking.
And you know how kids are. That paradigm can change on a dime too. Yeah. Like one of them wakes up and they're like had a nightmare or something, or they get up and they look. I mean, it was pretty ballsy for him to even do this.
Yeah.
You know, with the children. Yeah. But I mean, I think he wanted them to be his alibi. You know?
So I don't understand several things. I mean, intellectually, I understand them. Just emotionally, I don't really get it. Okay, so the beginning of episode 6 of Devil Within, it talks about what caused the blackout in Manhattan in 77, okay? Mm-hmm. And it was described as a cascading series of failures, okay? Yeah. It wasn't just one thing. It was all of these things that led up to it, okay? Mm-hmm. And so, and I think this one starts with the cops letting them go.
Yeah.
They let them go.
But I don't think it was the cops. I don't think it was the cops. Like in the material that I read...
Yeah.
Those detectives wanted to arrest him that night when he came back. Well, first of all, he brought the kids. When he came back from this camping trip and he pulls up and the cops are there and his family's there and they're like, what's going on? And he's like, what? Susan's not at work. I just went to try to pick her up and she's not there. You know, he's playing this role of the confused husband and she should have been at work, right? So then they want him to go down to the station. Well, he insists on bringing Charlie and Braden. So he's already out thinking them. He knows a 2 and a 4-year-old are going to last about 5 seconds in that closed room that gets hot. And they're like, you know, they've been in a car all day. Like it's the perfect thing to get out of there. Right. So then they tell him, okay, you need to come back. We need to continue this interview the next day. Well, he doesn't wake up in the morning and continue the interview right away. He's not down there at 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock. He like is cleaning. He like lit something on fire with this machine that he had from Home Depot, which they still don't know what he lit on fire. It could have been the murder weapon. Who knows what it was, right? So he gets there and that's when that 3-hour interview takes place. So he was already kind of scheming and he had, I guess, a high IQ. Which, you know, I mean, a high IQ doesn't mean that you're emotionally intelligent. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, you can, I don't know. He wasn't dumb, basically.
Problem solving. IQ basically relates to problem solving. So.
Yeah.
So which makes sense because the cops.
This was a huge problem.
Right. The cops thought they were so smart. They put a tracking device on his minivan and then figure they can just chill. And he doesn't even look at the minivan. He gets in a cab and leaves.
I know.
And the cops don't follow him? That's the second problem. One, they let him go. Two, they figure, we got the tracker on his van. We're solid. Mm-hmm. No, dipshits, you're not. He's gone. And now you lost him for an 800-mile round trip, and you don't know where he went.
I think they underestimated him because, 100%. You know what? There was no domestic violence that had been reported. The police hadn't been there. You know, they're like thinking, of course, but the kid said they went on an airplane to Dinosaur National Park, which wasn't true, you know? So right. Obviously the kid's saying some things, but I think they absolutely believed, you know, Charlie, absolutely. Oh, and I do too, you know?
Yeah, totally believe Charlie. Maybe they just didn't have enough to keep him. But then why tell him you're not going anywhere?
This has been a point of contention, I think, reading between the lines, is that the detectives wanted to hold him and arrest him. But the prosecutors were like, we don't have a body. There's not enough. And so I think that, you know, the higher ups were basically like, you got to cut him loose. And they probably were like, okay, let's do the tracker. Maybe he'll bring, and they wanted to find Susan. You know, they weren't, I'm sure 100, they probably thought she was dead, but you know, you can always pull that
out. Rookie detective to tail him. Just follow him.
I know. I just think, again, I think they underestimated him.
Right.
If you saw him there, you wouldn't think he was a, you know, a mental giant, a huge schemer. You know, he was sitting there like this. I mean, he was sniffling the entire interview. I mean, I had to cut out.
I couldn't believe it. I was driving me insane. I could see it in the waveforms of when I was editing. I'm like, he's sniffling.
I edited out tons of snivels because I'm like, I can't deal with this guy. And he's so like, men like this are just like disgusting to me that
yeah, agree.
He sits there and is pissed off that the window got broken when his wife, I mean, it's like, he can't hide that kind of stuff. You know what yeah. I mean? Even though he's trying to be all like, I don't know where she would go.
So then he moves up north.
He hightails it. Like, he's like not even putting up a show. He doesn't even go to any of these.
Doesn't help.
And
doesn't help
they have galvanized, you know, hundreds of people. I mean, they've got the Mormon church behind him. They've got like,
But look what he does. He goes home and he gets people to concoct an alternative set of facts that she ran off with another man. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I know. And believe me, I was so happy when those interviews backfired on that guy. I was so, yes. I know, right?
He gave them enough for a search warrant of his own place and they found all of that.
Brandon is sitting there clapping.
Clapping, like, ringing, I'm twisting my mustache.
Exactly. Jeez. Yes, I know. I was too. And I was like, I had to describe what he did because I know it was a lot, but I'm like, I want the world to know what he was doing.
I thought all right, the guy's a piece of shit because he's perving after his daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. right? But then it gets worse with like his 7 and 11-year-old neighbors with a telephoto lens while they're going to the bathroom. Are you fucking kidding me? Right?
And he was acting so high and mighty at those news. That's why I had to put those cuts in with him being like all in Chuck Cox's face and just like totally acting like they were the innocent victims. And like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And all the while, this guy has a trove
of kiddie porn. He goes down for kiddie porn. Boom.
Yeah. And voyeurism. But also can you imagine? I mean, he kept a stash of her used feminine products.
Brandon does not want to talk about that part. Okay. Okay. So let's just.
Okay. You know what?
The guy's a piece of shit. Okay. Great. Moving on. Thank you. Okay. Now let's talk about the partner in crime, the accomplice brother. Because this is an interesting. This is interesting. This is really, really interesting. Okay. I have an older brother and a younger brother. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I happen to be very fond of both of their spouses. So I can't really put myself in this position. But, you know, there's that great and really kind of hyperbolic axiom that says, you know, like a good friend will help you hide a secret, a best friend will help you hide a body. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that applies like right here. He called his brother. And I know it for a fact, and not for a fact, but I know it. Called his brother and said, I killed my wife and I need your help. And the brother's like, well, okay. okay, I'm sure you had good reason. Let's fucking, let's take care of this. Let's be smart. You know, it's two of us now. We'll have dad run interference with all this. She ran off with another dude, and you and I will do the hard shit together. Let's go.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
You know what? I know this is like a bro fantasy here that you're doing.
No, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Because my answer is I wouldn't do it.
I believe that you wouldn't do that. Yeah, I absolutely. The reason why this worked in that way, if it did work in that way, is because of the dad instilling in them these weird ideas about, like, you know, against religion. Again, and I'm not saying weird ideas. I just mean like that whole family dynamic of
militant.
Like,
yeah.
And against the government, against authority, against women, against, you know, that whole thing, like it's us against the world, you know? And like, I think that he fostered that. And that's why I said in episode one, the dad is like the root of these evil seeds. And I just feel like it's so terrible. It doesn't excuse anything that Josh did. It doesn't excuse anything that the brother Michael might have done. And I absolutely believe you're right that the guy that he called his brother and he said, you know, I did it. You know, I need your help.
I need a solid.
She deserved it. She was going to take my kids from me. She was
right. And here's why, right? Because she has no voice anymore. So he could say she was about to stab me. It was an accident. But no one will ever believe me. But you got to believe me, bro. I had no choice.
Absolutely.
Now, so remind everybody what happened to the pedo dad. He died right after he did 5 years and died as soon as he got out, right?
Yeah. And they were like at his hospital because he had some heart condition. They were like in the hospital, like saying, hey, you know, tell us what, do you know anything? Do you know where Susan is? You know, you're going to die. Basically, you know, this is the time.
And he had some weird hillbilly omerta, right? They're just like, nope, not saying shit.
Not only that, but he was probably, to watch those videos, it was like he was getting off on just having the control and the attention and being able to, like, you know, say all these things about Susan and like slam her name and smear her name and bring up her sexual. This is a classic, you know, classic patriarchy bullshit.
Yeah.
And all the while he's got this locked cabinet and all these secrets, you know, all this secrecy.
Oh, man. All right. And now there's a kind of a denouement or something wrapping up with the brother Michael too, correct?
Well, he ultimately committed suicide, you know? Right. And so he was listed as his beneficiary of his will. And I think that pressure,
guilt. Guilt. Now listen, mental disease and suicidal thoughts are actually very, very serious. And, you know, I like that you put these disclaimers at the end of a lot of your episodes, if you're having these suicidal ideations or anything like that, to you know, make a call and to seek help. But this guy, I think it's very, very clear that he couldn't outrun it. He couldn't outrun the guilt anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, because of what his brother did next. After brother Michael helps him hide the body and get away with shit, things just got worse. Dad goes away for pedo stuff. Okay, they start looking at the kid for some pedo stuff, and they're like, you want to keep your kids, you got to take the sex test if children get you off, okay? Mm-hmm. And take a lie detector. And he's like, uh-oh. I'm going to fail both of those motherfuckers. Okay. And what's going to happen now?
I mean, how hard, I mean, I don't know what your feeling is about polygraphs, but like, I think that is just a tool for law enforcement and that, you know, people fail them and are innocent and pass them and they're guilty. But I think that there's something to this psychosexual evaluation. If you could be in a room.
I looked up the psychosexual evaluation.
Wait, you know what? Your search engine is becoming close.
It's going to be weird. I'm probably going to get some people at my door, but no, but because I do another podcast in the medical field. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I asked about that during our most recent session, because they know that I do true crime stuff.
You asked them about it. You were like, well, hey, doctor, let me ask you a question.
They knew about this case. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm the only person in the fucking world that didn't know about it. So they knew about the case. And so there's actually a medical device that detects male arousal.
Yes, that's what this evaluation is.
And I wrote down what it's called, and it's a very strange name. It's a very strange name. Are you ready?
It's is it German?
No, it's called a penile plethysmograph. Okay? And so what it does, even if, like, a dude, you're sitting there, you're like, all right, I'm not going to get turned on. I'm going to think about baseball. Okay? Like, no matter what, if something in the darkest recesses of your mind says, wow, that's erotic, even the slightest little twinge of arousal, and this machine would pick it up. So you can't like hide it. Okay.
I know. That's why I'm saying I don't take a lot of stock in polygraphs, but you know what? I would put money.
Stock in that also. And so of the two things that law enforcement that we're dealing with now, the lie detector test and this, like, this dick sensor. Okay. Of those two things, don't laugh. It's a medical term, Carolyn. All right.
I know. I'm like, how did we come from penile?
Because I don't want to, I think I pronounced it wrong, and I'm going to sound like an idiot if I try again. So,
but dick sensor sounds so.
We all know what I'm talking about, right? Okay.
We do. But I know.
Of those two things, I think the lie detector test is primarily a tool to see how they're going to react when said you have to, you know what I mean? Like, are you willing to?
Of course.
Sure. I'm totally willing to.
It's a multi-pronged thing. Yeah. It's not that. But then once you're hooked up, it's also, they can continue to interrogate you if you have a very skilled polygrapher, right? Yes. And so that's something that they are sanctioned to be able to do, so they can get more information about what happened.
Yeah.
And then whether or not you pass or fail, like, you know.
If you have a good attorney, it doesn't mean shit anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's not like they can use it. So,
yeah. But see, here's the thing that gets me is that if you are in, like, this is going to be a very antiseptic environment, I would imagine, right? And it's going to be very serious. Like, I was thinking, do they give you the equipment to put on, or does someone put it on for you? Like, how does that work?
That's a good question. Yeah.
I don't know. And so then, I mean, I think it would be an environment where if you actually were stimulated on anything, especially child pornography, like, you are a pedophile.
And that's what they're saying. And that's exactly the thrust of this test, is that it's in such a sterile environment, right? It's not like you're in a fucking club and there's music.
What's going on with your shoulders there?
And there's like smooth jazz. No, it's like you're sitting on a cold steel table with your balls out, okay? And there's some dude doctor probably strapping this thing onto you, all right? And then you're in there. And so it's the least sexy environment imaginable. Okay. And so if there's, right. And so to your point, if still looking at some kiddie porn starts getting you going, then they know exactly who you are. Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. And so,
I'm surprised they don't do this more.
I think they do. But it's, and again, according to other people smarter than me, that oftentimes it's not used to criminally prosecute. Okay. It's for people who may end up doing that, and they get them help, or they get them put away, or they get them chemically castrated, like, whatever. Okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's used to kind of spot a potential fucking problem coming down the pipe. Mm-hmm. Right. But also in situations like this, where we're like, hey, we can't, be sure that you're going to be okay around even your own kids, right? So we got to find this shit out. and something flipped in him, you know?
Yeah. They weren't thinking. Again, I think that they underestimated him. And even though the Coxes were like, please, 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 please.
Big time underestimated his capacity for violence, which they shouldn't have if they already liked him for the murder of his wife. Okay. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have overlooked that. So now let's get to the worst part of this entire episode. And one of probably the person that I've instantly hated more, you know, instantly, actually, that there aren't levels of instant. I'm sorry. Let me take that back. But the first time I think that I had such a visceral reaction, like I was screaming at my computer at this fucking 911 operator. Okay.
Yeah. Who about channeling like,
who
like
just
not
felt like he had a little bit of power to wield over a hysterical woman, all right, and demeaning and talking down to her. You're not listening to me. How can you supervise yourself? I'm gonna mansplain shit to you.
And he wasn't like, the one listening. That's the thing.
Listening. He wasn't fucking listening.
He wasn't listening.
And now she maybe could have gotten her shit together a little bit with the address.
Well, let me just pause. I think this is a really important thing. And I know you get this. I know you do. So I'm not woman-splaining it to you. But like, this is one conversation, but women have to go through this so often, like so often, like even when she is like, this is an emergency. I'm worried for their lives. Like, and he's still doing it.
Listen, little lady. Just sit down and, you know, have a Benson and Hedges and calm down, because the big boys have to go deal with life-threatening stuff first. So you're going to have to wait.
I know.
This is life-threatening, dipshit. Okay? Yeah. And then the fucking place explodes.
Yeah. That's why I left it long, because I think that it's like, you really need to know what she was up against and what she was trying. Because it's like, what do you do? All the doors were locked. And I think that after it happened, you know, she got a lot of... You know, there were some people who were critical of her, and it's like, what in the world could she do?
What do you do? Is she authorized to break and enter? No, I bet she's trained. You know, I'm sure she's trained in exigency, I guess, but she's by herself. She's not law enforcement. She doesn't carry a weapon.
Well, and her first question was, what should I do?
Right.
You know, she was like, what do I do? You know? So, I mean, it probably wouldn't have made any difference anyway, because he was from the get-go doing it. But
right. He was, he was committed, and you could hear, we were talking about this earlier today, the guilt in her voice, where she was like, they were one step ahead of me. It's like, she was already kind of creating her defense, right? They were one step ahead of me. They were one step ahead of me. And he slammed the door in my face. One step ahead of me, slammed the door in my face. You know, and I was pounding.
And anybody who's walked with children knows that is so, like, you know, you're getting out of the car and they're running. And the sad thing is that they wanted to, even though they didn't want to see their dad that day, that desire to be with your parent is so strong.
But it makes me think that maybe she was trained a different way. Maybe she was trained to always go into the house first.
Oh, you mean that's why she was saying, like, she should have
They were only one step ahead of me. They're only one step ahead of me. Like, it's not that big of a deal. Maybe she was always, because that would make sense to me for things just like this, right? Like, go in first, make sure there's no one else there, make sure that it's safe, right? Make sure that he's, you know, not drunk or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Because she was adamant about telling anybody who would listen, they were one step ahead of me, you know? And I feel for her. I feel for her, but oh my gosh. So I think, I mean, and sadly, so many people from that bloodline are dead. You know, half of them deserved it. The other half didn't, but I'm just, you know, the dad and the two brothers and the wife and the two kids. I mean, just like, holy fuck. It's so sad. So sad. So the boys were 7 and 5 when their dad murdered them. So did that shut up a lot of the people that were saying that the wife, you know, met another man and ran off, and they're like, oh, that guy fucking killed her? because look how he behaved afterwards. Like, because the guilt caught up with him also, guilt and fear of being exposed.
I mean, I don't think that anybody really believed that. I mean, maybe the people who wanted to believe that, you know, I mean, there just was no evidence to support that. Yeah. And especially when it came out with her, the video that she'd taken where I'm just wanting to document in case anything happens to me or my family, you know, I hope everything works okay with, does this eye roll? Like, she knows it's not going to work out. Like, and then the letter and the safety deposit box, like, anybody who actually knows the case, even a little bit, would know that this is not, you know, there's no evidence connecting these two, except for the dad and the you know, Josh, who has obviously, you know, a reason to try to blame, you know, her, because that gets him off the hook, you know?
So who's left in this? Just her parents, the Coxes? Is that all that's...
And she had, they have, she was one of four. Or yeah, so I think that there's, you know, some aunties and stuff. Well, I mean, the kids are...
And dipshit pedo guy, he had other siblings, right?
Yes, he had, so he had two brothers, right. And then he had two sisters. And
but the only one implicated was Michael. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the sisters, the oldest sister, she went to the dad's house and was wired up and tried to get him to admit.
She turned.
And she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't work. No, the dad like kicked her out of the house.
He sniffed it. He sniffed her out. Like, you're wearing a wire. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh man. What a tragic.
I know. Story. I know. It's so tragic. And the Cox family, that Chuck Cox, and I actually interviewed him for when I was working at a news radio station, because he does this charity called Charlie's Dinosaurs, and it's like a backpack where they put all the stuff for like homeless kids and foster kids, and I mean, this family is they're doing a lot of good, and I know they will do good with the money that they received. Like, they certainly
put Charlie's s'mores recipe in the show notes.
Oh, you, let's do it.
Great. Yeah.
Actually, even better, let's put Charlie's Dinosaur in this, let's help some kids.
Yep. Okay.
It's a great charity.
Wow. Okay. Well, and this is what the Cold podcast is about. If people want to really dive deep into this.
Absolutely. I highly recommend the Cold podcast.
Yeah.
It is the listening to this podcast made me want to start doing a true crime podcast because they just did it so well. And I think that, you know, they brought a lot of awareness to domestic violence and, this case as tragic and horrible. It's kind of like what Ann Bremner said, you know, something good needs to come out of this.
Yeah.
You know, the Cox family worked with legislators in Utah and Washington to change the laws so that, you know, if you're a person of interest in your spouse's murder, you know, there needs to be guidelines that you shouldn't get the kids, you know, until that's kind of cleared up.
Yeah.
You know, because if that would have happened in this case,
kids would be safe.
You know, the kids would be safe. And they should have never not been in a facility, you know, if they would have kept, you know, but Josh was the type of person who just, you know, he's probably like that 911 operator. Ugh. You know, and he just was like insistent on getting his kids. And, you know, somebody caved and he got what he wanted.
I hope that 911 operator got retrained. That's what I hope, because that was appalling to listen to.
Yeah. And I think that's why this case.
They have a hard job, first responders, all that. Mm-hmm. I get it. They have a hard job, but come on.
I think that's why this case hit so many notes with people, is because there were so many issues going on here and so many places where it could have turned a different way, but it didn't. And it, you know,
All right. Well, hey, well done. That was a very interesting and tragic episode. But I was on an emotional roller coaster, you know, of disgust and horror and, a lot of curiosity, and and I learned some new medical terms, unfortunately. So yeah.
I'm sure your doctors had a lot to say about it.
But listen, an actual like doctor person, they talk about things with such a clinical detachment that it was nothing. There weren't any like stupid giggling like me, like I'm such a douche, right? It was just like, oh no, that's what this is for. It's a very serious device, and it's very accurate and this and used for this. I went, yeah, of course, I'm aware. Yes, very serious stuff going on.
Is that your like?
My fake voice? That's is my that fake voice. My fake grown-up voice. Yeah,
I know you actually had like. The eyebrows were working.
Oh yeah. I can turn it on when I need to. I can turn it on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this week, Nation. Thank you for hanging in there with us. Hope you enjoyed part two of what happened to Susan Cox Powell. Please consider going over to Apple and giving us a rate and a review or sharing with your friends. And also, we'd very much appreciate it if you would consider supporting the great companies that support our show. Carolyn, anything else you'd like to add?
Nope. We'll see you next time.
See you next time. And until then, please stay safe, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Bye.
Booyah.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a Pie in the Sky production, recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself. Music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Hello, the world. We are They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck. And we are sisters that want to tell you about lesser known murders.
Our cases are always compelling, maybe even a little scary, with just enough banter to keep it interesting.
You can find us at theywillkill.com
or anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you there.
See ya.